Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it is my great pleasure to introduce you to the festival's 2014 season, Around Dvorak. Music at Menlo's 2014 season explores dual facets of the unfolding of Western music throughout the classical and romantic eras and into the 20th century. Catalyzed by a lineage of composers from Haydn and Mozart, through Schubert and Brahms, to Schoenberg, Webern, and Berg a generation later, Vienna emerged as the epicenter of a dynamic musical tradition that remains central to the canon today. Meanwhile, starting in the latter half of the 19th century, the folk traditions of Hungary, Romania, and the Czech lands permeated Western classical music, as composers like Bedřich Smetana, Lajos Janáček, Béla Bartók, and Zoltán Kodály awakened to the richness of their own musical heritage and sought to cultivate a distinct musical voice. At the center of this dialectic was Antonín Dvořák, the self-described simple Czech musicant who likewise possessed the romantic ferocity of his mentor, Johannes Brahms. No other composer so fluently integrated the dual traditions of Western classicism and Central European folk music, developing a distinct musical language whose influence would be felt as far as the United States. This season, Music at Menlo offers 8 colorful concert programs that revolve around Dvorak, taking listeners on a thrilling journey between Vienna, Prague, and other fascinating musical destinations along the way. Audio notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the festival. The Lobkowicz family, one of the most prominent Bohemian lineages dating back to the 14th century, has ranked for generations among the Western world's greatest arts patrons. The 7th Prince Lobkowicz, Joseph Franz Maximilian, was a benefactor to numerous artists and composers in the late 18th century, most notably Joseph Haydn and Ludwig van Beethoven. Prince Lobkowicz was the dedicatee of Haydn's Opus 77 string quartets, nicknamed the Lobkowicz Quartets, and Beethoven likewise dedicated numerous works to the prince, including his Opus 18 and 74 string quartets, the song cycle An die Ferne Geliebte, and his 3rd, 5th, and 6th symphonies. Presented in conjunction with this summer's second encounter, led by Maximilian's modern heir William Lobkowicz, Concert Program 3 celebrates the Lobkowicz family's rich cultural legacy. The program begins with music by Joseph Haydn.
The artistic life of Joseph Haydn embodies the breadth of the Viennese classical era. He was born in 1732, near the end of the Baroque period. J.S. Bach would live another 18 years until 1750, and George Friedrich Handel until 1759. And over the course of Haydn's life, indeed largely by his own hand, what has since become known as the classical style would grow to maturity. By the time of Haydn's death in 1809, his student Ludwig van Beethoven was boldly extending the classical idiom with his own brand of fiery individualism. And within 5 years, the precocious Viennese teenager Franz Schubert would pen his first significant works. Haydn's excellence in every prevalent musical genre of the day rendered him the most celebrated composer of his generation. And his seminal role in cultivating the signature innovations of that period have earned him historical standing as the father of the classical style. Noting his foundational contributions to the symphony and the string quartet genres, two of Western music's quintessential media since the 18th century, musicologist James Webster writes that, quote, "No other composer approaches Haydn's combination of productivity, quality, and historical importance in these genres. In the 20th century, he was understood primarily as an absolute musician. But earnestness, depth of feeling, and referential tendencies are equally important to his art." End quote. Haydn composed the two quartets of his Opus 77 in 1799 for Prince Joseph Franz Maximilian Lobkowitz, one of his greatest patrons as well as a skilled amateur violinist. The Opus 77 string quartets would be the last of Haydn's foundational catalog of 68 quartets.
With Haydn, it's interesting that of all the genres that he wrote for, his string quartet music is what we really keep playing.
Danish string quartet violist Asbjørn Nørgaard.
Of course, people play his symphonies, but you cannot be a string quartet without playing a lot of Haydn string quartets, and it's often in the programs because it's basically Haydn who created the genre. Not just putting the four instruments together, because this people did before, but the way of writing this kind of more democratic way where each part had something interesting to bring to the table. And this Opus 77, I think it's one of his very last quartets. I think he only finished one more. It was supposed to be a set of six quartets, but for some reason he gave up finishing this set. And there is some speculation that he was a little bit intimidated by the young Beethoven, who just started writing string quartets and just did his Opus 18, I think, at the same time. And Haydn knew that this young lion was coming up, so some people think that he was like, okay, I'll let Beethoven carry on the torch from here.
In fact, Prince Lobkowitz commissioned both Haydn's Opus 77 and Beethoven's Opus 18 quartets. And the completion and premieres of these quartets in such close proximity, in retrospect, offers a tantalizing snapshot of, indeed, an important passing of the torch in the history of Western music.
Musically, it is looking more backwards than forwards, I think, at least if you compare to the Beethoven string quartets. But there are still some details in this music that shows that Haydn knew what was coming. Like a couple of more extreme expressions that you normally find in the earlier Haydns. But it's a very delightful Haydn sound that you get, the sound of the old world somehow.
Much of the material found in the quartet in G major, Opus 77 number 1, resembles folk music in its melodic immediacy and unassuming demeanor. But as would be the case generations later with composers like Dvorak, Bartok, and others, Haydn treats these folk-like materials with impeccable craftsmanship. Some scholars believe the first movement's march-like opening theme to be based on a Hungarian recruiting song. Danish quartet violinist Rune Tonsgaard Sorensen.
I think it's very light. It's very it's G major. It's very bright and positive music.
Haydn extends the theme into a dialogue between the two violins, conducted in breathless triplet figures. Those triplets become the accompaniment pattern to the second theme, a sweet, sustained melody equal to the first theme in its sunny demeanor.
The second movement is in E flat major, so huge contrast with this key to the G major first movement.
The third movement is a minuet. But in this minuet, composed late in Haydn's career, we can perhaps hear Haydn leaning away from that aristocratic dance form's genteel trappings. Its tempo, marked presto, and its wide melodic leaps of 2.5 octaves point towards the more restless scherzo form that his student, Beethoven, and subsequently the entire Romantic generation, would come to favor. The jaunty trio section resembles, and very possibly derives from, another Hungarian folk dance. The quartet's presto finale is thought to come from a kolo, a Croatian folk dance, which would surface later in the work of Antonin Dvorak. Rune Tonsgaard Sorensen.
I think the whole piece has like a very, it's just a very smiling piece of music, so to say, and very inventive, as Björn said. It's maybe looking a little bit more back, but at the same time, he already did, more than 70 string quartets at the time when he wrote this, so he had a huge experience in writing for these four instruments, and you can really hear his equilibrism in writing for this ensemble, and I think it's gonna be a lot of fun to play it, because there's something for everybody, and all four parts are very interesting with a lot of motifs going on, and it's just positive music, I would say.
The remainder of the program is given over to Haydn's student and arguably Western music's most influential composer, Ludwig van Beethoven. We encounter three works dating from different periods in the composer's life, all dedicated to the seventh Lobkowitz prince. From Beethoven's middle period, the song cycle An die ferne Geliebte and the string quartet No. 10, nicknamed the Harp Quartet. Concluding the program is one of the set of quartets that inaugurated Beethoven's seminal cycle of 16, the Quartet in F Major, Opus 18, No. 1.
We commonly think of Beethoven's life and career as falling into three periods, which naturally is an oversimplification of one of history's most complex artists. But it does nevertheless give us a useful shorthand for contextualizing his music. Beethoven's early period encompasses his formative years, up until around 1802, the period during which his work most strongly reflects the influence of Haydn and Mozart. His middle, or so-called heroic period, takes up the following decade, marked by works of epic magnitude that far exceeded what anyone had previously attempted to express with music. And the third period, from 1813 until the end of Beethoven's life, produced some of the composer's most forward-looking music, which would continue to confound listeners long after his death in 1827. And Beethoven's cycle of 16 string quartets roughly outlines this three-period schema. From the early period, we have the six Opus 18 quartets, his first essays in the genre. The majestic Opus 59 Razumovsky quartets demonstrate the audacity of the heroic period. And in the set of five late quartets, we have some of Beethoven's most profound creations. But lying outside of this tidy framework are two single quartets, the Serioso Quartet, Opus 95, and the Quartet in E-flat Major, Opus 74, nicknamed the Harp Quartet.
We will play the harp for the first time at Music at Menlo, so we will start practicing it later today or something.
Danish quartet violist Asbjørn Norgaard. And by the way, this was back in early February that we spoke.
And I think if you compare it to the other of this middle quartet, the 95, they are the two standalone middle quartets in Beethoven's career. And I think it's going to be a very different thing to play the harp. It, to me, it feels like almost a perfect string quartet in the way it's built. Whereas in 95, it's much more like he took a piece of rock and broke it on the floor, and then the quartet is what's left of the rock. I feel like when I listen to the harp, it's very rounded, very balanced. All the movements fit very well together, and it feels like almost the most organic Beethoven that I heard in a string quartet.
The harp quartet is... he has definitely found his way at that point. And here we get the very... the Beethoven sound of tension all the time.
Danish quartet violinist Frederik Aaland.
The first movement, you know, with this long introduction, you almost can't breathe when you hear this introduction. It's so tense and strong. It's very elegant and very virtuose in a way, but it's still filled with tension all the time. You never feel comfortable because you're always heading somewhere. It's not a single emotion. If you're happy, then there's still this kind of shade of doubt somewhere. You're going somewhere dark.
Out of this slow, suspenseful introduction, three staccato chords launch the music into the first theme, a sweet cantabile melody introduced by the first violin above a flowing accompaniment in the second. The quartet was nicknamed the Harp, not by Beethoven, but by a publisher later on, who so named it because of this magical passage that follows.
A key development in the first movement is pizzicato notes, where we pluck the string with the fingers instead of bowing it with the bow. And this plucking of strings moves around from player to player, and that gives an impression of the quartet being one big harp.
The second theme is marked by rhapsodic 16th note runs, initiated by the viola, then joined in short order by the rest of the ensemble. The development section whips up the thematic materials from the exposition into a dramatic maelstrom.
Then there's a very, very cool, in the climax of the first movement, the first violin goes nuts for a long time with very fast notes when the other players are just plucking this melody as a harp would do. And that's, I think, Beethoven never gave his pieces these kind of names. It was his publisher who wanted some good marketing, I think, but it's a pretty suiting name, I think.
Beethoven follows this with a ravishingly beautiful slow movement. The first violin presents a tender melody. Beethoven instructs the lower strings to play mezza voce, in medium voice. This music possesses a prayerful solemnity that looks ahead to the profundity of the late quartets. The dramatic climax of the quartet comes with the hard-charging third movement. The mood brightens in the contrasting B section. But rather than ease off the gas pedal, Beethoven, on the contrary, ramps up the movement's propulsive energy further. As if to calm the fury of the third movement, the finale starts off with this winsome tune. The quartet concludes with a set of six variations on this theme. The variations alternate between extroverted vigor, and gentle lyricism. The sixth and final variation combines these two energies. The music begins quietly, but underpinning the flowing melody in the upper strings, the cello plays a low pedal E flat in a quietly expectant triplet rhythm. This builds quickly to a brilliant coda, but Beethoven has a playful punchline up his sleeve for the quartet's final measure. Beethoven composed the song cycle on Die Ferne Geliebte, or To the Distant Beloved, in April 1816. Beethoven isn't particularly thought of as a notable composer of Lied, or art song. On Die Ferne Geliebte was his only song cycle, and the only time he approached the medium with the same level of seriousness as with his instrumental chamber and symphonic music. But it's worth noting the significance of this one contribution to the song literature. In 1816, Schubert, history's greatest composer of Lieder, was still several years away from composing his Die Schöne Müllerin and Winterreise. The song cycle is widely considered the gold standard of the genre. With An die Ferne Geliebte, Beethoven inaugurated the tradition that Schubert and others would render such an essential medium for the Romantic era. The songs are sung from the point of view of a heartsick young lover, separated from his beloved. The cycle begins, "On the hill I sit, peering into the blue hazy land, toward the distant pastures, where you, beloved, I found." The mood remains wistful in the second song, as the young lover sings, "Where the mountains so blue out of the foggy gray look down, where the sun dies, where the cloud encircles, I wish I were there. There to the thoughtful wood, the power of love pushes me. Inward sorrow, ah, this moves me not from here, could I, dear, by you eternally be." The young lover implores nature to send his amorous greetings to his distant beloved. "Light veils in the heights, and you, little brook, small and narrow, should my love spot you, greet her for me many thousand times. Whisper to her of my love's imploring, little brook, small and narrow, in your waves let her see my innumerable tears."
Leichte Segler in den Höhen, und zu Bächlein klein und schmal, wird mein Liebchen ihr erspähen, grüßt sie mir für tausendmal. Singt ihr von den Zitern, gehen singend in dem stillen Tal.
The final song of the cycle is its most quintessentially romantic, as the young lover sings, "Take then these songs that I, beloved, sang to you. Sing them of evenings to the quiet sound of the lute." The program concludes with Beethoven's string quartet in F major, opus 18, number 1. Beethoven composed the set of six quartets that would appear as his opus 18 between 1798 and 1800. These being his first attempts at the genre that his teacher, Joseph Haydn, and his idol, Mozart, had enshrined as the most important chamber music genre, Beethoven understandably worked very meticulously and with great attention to detail in writing these quartets. Over their two-year gestation, they underwent constant and extensive revision before Beethoven finally sent them to his publisher. In 1799, Beethoven inscribed an autographed copy of the F major quartet, Opus 18, number 1, as a gift to a close friend and confidant, the violinist Carl Friedrich Amenda. "Dear Amenda," he wrote, "accept this quartet as a small token of our friendship, and whenever you play it, recall the days we passed together and the sincere affection felt for you then, which will always be felt by your warm and true friend, Ludwig van Beethoven." The following year, still before the quartet's publication, Beethoven sent the following request: "My dear, my good Amenda, my heartily beloved friend, do not lend out my quartet anymore, because I have made many changes in it. I have only just learnt how to write quartets properly, as you will see when you receive them." As mentioned earlier, Prince Joseph Franz Maximilian Lobkowitz, who commissioned the Opus 18 quartets, simultaneously commissioned a set of six quartets from Haydn. Haydn only completed two, the first of which, the quartet in G major, Opus 77, number 1, opens the program.
What I think is interesting about this program is that it's very late Haydn and then it's very early Beethoven. So it's a very old guy and a very young guy.
Danish quartet violinist Frederik Åland.
And you can feel that. I think the late Haydn is a little bit more, you can kind of feel that's a change in the air a little bit. It's not completely carefree Haydn that we heard before. You know, he wrote so many quartets. He did one after the other. This one, I think, has a little more thought to it. And, you know, there's something changing. And then there's the early one by Beethoven, which is written by a young guy, which maybe he's only finding his own way barely. And he changes stuff. He's kind of finding his way. And this very young guy who was, he thought he was the king of the world, you know, he could do everything. And he was the romantic guy and the dramatic guy. And they're so different, but still you can feel that it's an old, wise guy, and then this young, bravado kind of guy.
Though published as Opus 18, number 1, the F major quartet isn't actually the first quartet Beethoven composed. The quartet in D major, Opus 18, number 3, comes first in order of composition. But Beethoven's publisher felt that the F major quartet's affirmative curtain raiser of a first theme would serve as the more compelling opening to the set. Already in this F major quartet, we hear evidence of Beethoven's creative identity that would take hold for the rest of his career. Listen again to the motif that starts the quartet, that seemingly trivial gesture with the little turn in the middle. Beethoven's sketchbooks show that he agonized endlessly over that one gesture, trying different pitches, different rhythms, changing the lengths of notes, until he felt he had it just right. And what made it just right, as far as Beethoven was concerned? Well, in the same way that he would later, very famously, use a simple four-note motif. As the building block for his towering Fifth Symphony. So in this case has Beethoven crafted a seemingly innocuous gesture that he can use to explore a vast terrain of moods and expressive characters. That motif, so harmless when we first hear it, appears over 100 times over the course of this first movement. And this ability to compose music of such insight and powerful eloquence using the simplest of materials, that's one of the things that would distinguish Beethoven throughout his career. The first violin introduces the second theme, a gentle syncopated melody taken up in turn by the rest of the quartet. But it's the ingenuity with which Beethoven extends and develops that opening gesture that especially accounts for this first movement's brilliance. The heart-rending slow movement represents one of the most emotionally gripping creations of Beethoven's early career. One of the quartet's most telling revisions is Beethoven's tempo marking for this movement. It was originally marked simply adagio molto, but Beethoven later modified it to adagio affettuoso ed appassionato.
And I think what is maybe interesting with this is that clearly the tempo wasn't enough for him.
Danish quartet cellist Frederik Sjolin.
He really wanted to bring some emotion into it, and from just filling out a form, I'm not saying that Haydn was just filling out a form, but he was clearly within a form and within some boundaries. I think Beethoven really just followed his emotions, and this is maybe one of the first examples that, you know, he's telling us that the emotions are the important thing for him. And, you know, this brings him in a totally crazy direction, as we can see in the late quartets. So this is maybe the first step in this direction.
When Beethoven played the slow movement for Karl Amenda, Amenda noted that it evoked for him, quote, the parting of two lovers, end quote. Beethoven was pleased. When composing it, he said, he had in mind the tomb scene from Romeo and Juliet. Certainly, its keening lyricism, anxious silences, and overall funereal quality befit the scene. The Bright-Eyed Scherzo offers the listener a welcome reprieve from the overpowering slow movement. The quartet concludes with an affable allegro finale. But as with the first movement, whose seemingly trivial opening remark turns out to be a seminally consequential gesture, here too a friendly, slightly quirky musical idea. Beethoven shows us to be pregnant with musical possibility. The first and second violin engage in what sounds like a game of leapfrog to present the jovial second theme above rolling eighth notes in the lower strings. But in the movement's development section, elements of these two amiable themes combine in an angry double fugue. An anticipatory passage of repeated eighth notes points the music towards a reprise of the opening theme. And All Is Well by the quartet's end, as Beethoven brings the finale to a satisfying conclusion. Audio notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Dvorak's String Quintet in G Major, Opus 77, performed by the Kuhl Quartet and Peter Bukowski, appears courtesy of Hyperion Records. Haydn's String Quartet in D Minor, Opus 76, No. 2, performed by the Danish String Quartet, appears courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Beethoven's String Quartet in F Major, Opus 18, No. 1, is performed by the Emerson String Quartet and appears courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Anton Reicha's Clarinet Quintet is performed by clarinetist Wolfhard Pentsch and the Amadi Quartet and appears courtesy of Divox Records. Haydn's String Quartet in G Major, Opus 77, No. 1, performed by the Belchia String Quartet, Beethoven's Harp Quartet, performed by the Jupiter String Quartet, and An die Ferne Geliebte, performed by baritone Randall Scarlatta and pianist Gilbert Kalisch, appear courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Beethoven's Quintet for Piano and Winds, Opus 16, performed by the Gaudier Ensemble, and Hummel's Opus 74 Septet, performed by Capricorn, appear courtesy of Hyperion Records. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Light.